What's up, everyone? Welcome back to another episode of the Performance Strategies and Stumbles podcast. I'm your host, Dan Howells, and I'm welcoming back Simon Harries today for part two of his podcast series. We dig into his mistakes and stumbles. We look at communication errors. We look at rehab mistakes and where he could have been stronger in certain situations. If you didn't listen to last week's episode, it got a tremendous amount of great feedback. So go back and have a little listen, understand a little bit about where Simon's from. He's currently at the New South Wales Institute of Sport. And in last week's episode and this episode, Simon draws on a number of different aspects that myself and Andy McDonald cover off in the Rehab Simplified Group Mentorship. Have a little look at the show notes below if you'd like to join our next cohort in July. That's it from me. Let's head over to the episode now with Simon. So Simon, welcome. We're back here for part two. Are you ready to share some of your stumbles and lessons learned?
Yeah, good to go, man. Let's go.
Okay, so we're going to... I ask this to everybody, really, is to let's go back to the start of the career, and that can relate to some of the emerging practitioners, early stage practitioners who are listening. You know, what are some of the mistakes you look back on early on in your career and think, if I'd just done something a little bit different, I could have maybe accelerated my career a little bit faster or stopped myself from making certain mistakes?
Yeah. So when you posed that question just before, there's an incident that came to mind. It was like I was so early in my S&C journey. I might have been less than 6 months into it. And I remember on the side of the rugby field, a coach absolutely blowing up at me. Basically, the essence of the conversation was, who cares if they don't get injured if we don't win? Right?
Yeah.
And I, you know, they were in a period of, like, this is a junior development program, and they had been, you know, working these guys really, really hard. But I was new to that sport, and, you know, that was the culture, but, you know, it was work hard and like push them. And it was very much, it was rugby league, by the way. The game is very structured in how they play it. And so, you know, I was naive and I didn't realize it. That's just how they trained. Because they knew that if they did not play structured football, they would lose.
Yeah.
But I was probably trying to impart my perceived expertise on the situation, not very well.
In that situation, was that you were trying to modulate intensity? You know, that classic, I'm an S&C, so we'll prescribe some intensity. And he blew up in your face because he felt you were holding the intensity back. What did it look
like? Yeah, it was a situation where... I had been instructed by my line manager who worked at the professional team to basically, he said, make sure they don't, you know, blow these kids up and, you know, we'll just put some good load management around them. And I probably just took that as a, maybe with a little bit too much steam and puffed chest, you know, and was like, oh, this is what we're going to do then. And just didn't approach it in the right way. I had zero tact to have that conversation with the coaches.
We'll get to tact in a minute. In terms of S&C fundamentals, were you approaching that situation with a load preservation, like less is more, as opposed to helping the coaches build a tolerance to load for those athletes?
Absolutely.
Yeah. What advice would you give to listeners then from that lesson in terms of, because that is quite commonplace at the minute. We've got thresholds and we must not go over them. How narrow-minded is that, in your opinion, based on that experience?
It's so narrow, isn't it? I think what I would suggest is build a relationship with the coaches as fast as possible to understand what they know is needed to prepare for whatever they're playing. And then go about, I suppose, a longer, slower process to understand, okay, well, when the coach says they need to do this, what is the actual amount of work they're doing when they do that? And, you know, just sit back, I suppose, observe, was there any negative consequences to that? Did they get injured? And if they didn't, well, maybe it was okay.
Yeah. I have a distinct discussion with a mentee at one point in the past, and we were talking about, oh, the coaches are flogging the athletes. They're flogging them, and I don't know how to deal with it. And I said, well, what's the impact of it? And they were like, well, what do you mean? It's like, well, let's talk about this last 6 weeks. They flogged them at the end of the session for the last 6 weeks. What's it look like? Oh, laps and repeat efforts, etc. Okay, cool. How many games have you won in the last 6 weeks? Oh, five. okay, how many injuries have you had? Oh, we haven't had any. I was like, you're thinking this textbook binary sense as opposed to like what actually moves the needle. Maybe this coach is driving culture in a really positive way and questionably getting more intensity out of the players than maybe yourself is as a practitioner and building more resilience. So I think you've encapsulated that there in that story really well. You talked about tact and not having the right tact as well. So I think that probably talks more towards the soft skills and the interaction between coaches and other staff. You know, what were you limited by at that time? What mistakes were you making in terms of that soft skill side of things? And what do you do differently now?
Well, I was limited because I had zero experience.
Yeah.
And at that point, I was only in my second year of my undergrad degree, which wasn't even a sports science degree, by the way. It was PE teaching. So I was just so far out of my depth. And also the structure of the role was I was based in the gym and there was big numbers of athletes. And what would happen was a group of athletes would be sent to the gym. I'd have literally 30 minutes with them, do, you know, whatever in the gym, send them back. The next group would come in and that would be the process for about 2 hours or so. So I was actually just not on field. I wasn't in proximity to the coaches enough to develop that relationship. And as I said,
quite an isolating space, the gym.
Can be.
It's we talk about it being a safe space. It doesn't mean it's the best place to, especially when you're working in a team. You know, we had Spencer with me on the pod a few episodes ago, and we got into discussions about conversations with coaches. It's probably even more polarized there, the pool for the divers versus the gym. It might even be in a completely different facility. Totally. And if you're not as a practitioner putting yourself in the sports space, I think that's a huge disadvantage for you. In terms of last question at this stage of your career before we move to some more rehab mistakes and stumbles. Were you cognizant of needing help and were you able to ask for help? You talked about puffing your chest out. And so I wonder if that, did that limit your ability to find solutions quicker? Did you ask for help or was that something you were resistant to?
I knew immediately in that moment that it was the wrong thing. Like, there's no doubt about that. I wasn't that ignorant to that.
Of course.
Was I suppose, conscious enough to know, oh, you know, I need to go and figure this out? Perhaps not. But, like, I had a very good manager, Tim Rogers, at the time. And so, you know, well, I spoke to him a lot about it. And to be honest, I can't recall, you know, how deeply we discussed that conversation. And maybe I didn't even in the moment realize it was such a pivotal thing because I can still remember it, even though it was you know, 15 years ago or something.
Yeah.
So perhaps I didn't actually do anything about it. Yeah. I think that's probably the level I was at that time.
Yeah. I think the fact that the thing you've talked about there is sourcing a trusted individual, even if it was a line manager, a mentor, to debrief that situation with. And although you don't remember the lasting impact of that discussion, that's a much stronger play than being ignorant to that situation. And people do make that mistake. They're afraid to ask for help. So I think that's a really good lesson to share that even though you knew in that moment you made a mistake, was that you resourced other people to make sense of it. That's awesome. So let's move into the rehab space and be a little bit more specific to the part one strategy episode.
Mm.
We don't like to make mistakes in the injury space, but we all have at some point. You know, let's get into that. What are some of the mistakes or stumbles you've made across rehab and what have you learned from those lessons?
Yeah, so thinking about this one, I've had a number of instances where there's been highly charged situations where I haven't been strong enough on making a recommendation for return to play, like to play or not to play, you know, based on some good quality information. And so there was one situation, I won't go into the details, but I'll talk you through essentially the steps of what happened. So it was the player had a long-term injury. They had returned to play, right? And they had achieved all criteria at that point that we were very happy with. Like that included, you know, 3D motion analysis of you know, their kinetics of how they were doing certain tasks. So it was really comprehensive and we were really quite happy with him returning to play. In his first match back, he did a subsequent injury. of the same joint, but, you know, to a far lesser extent, a major event.
Yeah. All right.
So, you know, everyone was obviously highly charged at that point. Has he redone his injury? Well, the imaging said, no, he hasn't. He's just got a little meniscal injury. All right. So then we had a period of time about 2 weeks before they hopped on the plane to go to the event. He passed subjective functional criteria. And, you know, if we refer to the rehab running framework, he passed a lot of the subjective criteria of competency to do certain tasks. He hopped on the plane. They went away to the competition. He returned to play. And they still had a couple of weeks of training over there before they played. And he did that, you know, and there was a couple of, like, you know, my boss who went to the tournament. He was like, you know what? He doesn't look perfect. There's something not quite right here. But it wasn't enough to, you know, to put the brakes on and like rule the player out. Anyway, the player returned to play, but he didn't perform. He wasn't up to it. After the fact, the player admitted to hiding symptoms. And it was a remarkable situation that after the emotions of the competition and him letting down his guard that he was holding back on symptoms, the physical manifestation of his injury came out. The muscle atrophy that he saw off a meniscal injury, which you wouldn't typically see to that extent, was really quite large.
And that was after he had accepted that he was potentially hiding things. He just deconditioned from that point?
Correct.
Is that what you mean? Yeah. Nice. Where do you place stumbles in that then? Because you've gone through a criteria-based approach. You've gone through what you know is sort of trusted in what you do, which is largely physical and objective, right? It's largely placed in that sense. But you'll also get a sense of the psychosocial as such. But it's not our area of specialty as S&C coaches, of course. So where do you place a stumble in this? You know, for me and those listening, they might say, well, you did as much as you could have in that situation.
So the stumble for me is that I wasn't strong enough putting a recommendation forth. And, you know, perhaps I wilted and, you know, it was a little flower that wilted in the sun in that moment when perhaps I should have put forward my at least opinion at that time.
And was your opinion that you weren't seeing this athlete at a level you would have expected to see them? So in the moment, or is this a retrospective?
No, in the moment, I wasn't. In the moment, and this is probably before I answer that part, the other part of this stumble was not being appreciative of the big picture. And so the big picture there is, you know, understanding, well, what's the time of the year? You know, what influence does the coach and the athlete have on the situation? Is there something like a contractual thing going on behind the scenes that you don't know about? Are there other injuries in your team? Does that have play, you know, into the whole thing? And not understanding that, or not appreciating it. You know, of course, everyone understands those things, but sometimes you don't appreciate the role they play in decision making.
Well, so for the athlete as well, right?
Failure.
Yeah. So if we just simplify this for the listeners, is you use the words major event, which for me would be like quadrennial type of event, and that this athlete's response to the work you put around him might be very, very different to a game on a Saturday, week to week, right? And so it sounds like your decision-making process didn't change too much based on the gravity of the event, and that is something you've learned from. Context.
Yeah, I think so. I think in hindsight, as I said, like he passed just the subjective criteria. But I think, you know, in hindsight, in that situation, a little bit more objectivity in our assessments would have been ideal. And also perhaps, you know, as you asked, like, should I in that moment have given a stronger recommendation? Well, yeah, maybe I should have, because he still hopped on the plane not having done everything. There were still things to do in training when they arrived.
Yeah. All right. And that's a really good, honest answer that, you know, again, it's contextual, right? Do you yield based on the gravity of a situation and the empathy towards an athlete to help them get to this pinnacle for them, and therefore you flex on your principles? Sounds like that might have happened. How much was lack of clarity with the coaching staff about that, hey, he must be ready before he gets on a plane versus we can use those 2 weeks to get him ready? Had you had those discussions?
Yeah, we had, and that's where the discussion had gone, you know, that we have a bit of time still for him to progress through rehab. Because, you know, as I said, the injury that he sustained when he returned to play was a meniscal injury, you know.
Yeah.
It's still probable that in 4 weeks he could play, you know, if it was not a bad one. So, yeah, that is the approach we went for, which is the learn. And that's actually one of the notes that I had written down here, you know, like, what is the mistake? It's not predetermining how the decision was going to get made. And so what I mean by that is that I feel like if we could have done that better, we would have stress tested multiple scenarios. What if this happens and this and this? What answer do we come up with? Is it a yes or a no? And doing it with a few different situations.
Yes. You've answered my next question, which is how would you change your practice if you could go back or you encounter this type of situation again? And it sounds like you're doing far more of the hypothetical what if with coaches. So everybody's heard the same thing and you've got a reference point of which to marker people towards. Is that right? Am I hearing that right?
Yeah,
that would be what you change.
Exactly right. It's the what if. And because I think if you do the what if, you deflate the emotions in the room, remove a little bit of bias, and you have a higher chance of getting the decision right.
Yeah. Nice one. Okay. I was wondering if we could move, I know I'm catching you on the spot a little bit here, but like more program design or testing and assessments, etc. Are there any mistakes or stumbles you've made in those spaces, however early or late in your career, that stick out, that have influenced your work moving forward?
I think, I suppose, testing would have been not being specific enough with the testing. You know, in our first part of this convo, you know, I kind of laid out, you know, assessing, you know, something low force repetitively, you know, as you said, I think you said quite general capability, and then something a little bit more dynamic and then quite specific. I definitely did not do that well enough in the early parts of my career. So that, I suppose that's a general stumble.
Did that look like, okay, I see everybody else doing these assessments, so I'm going to do them, but there was no purpose behind those assessments, or did you not assess at all?
Yeah, it was more, I was heavily influenced, of course, as we all are, by, you know, the people that we work with. And some of the philosophies of the people I have worked with was definitely more down the lines of what they can actually demonstrate on field carries a lot of weight in decision making.
Yeah.
Which of course it does, right? I'm not saying it doesn't. But perhaps the balance was wrong in the more rigorous testing behind the scenes that supports what you see or disproves what you see, for example.
Yeah. So did that look like, if we were walking into Simon back then, is that somebody who has an absence of testing and therefore just trusts the on field? Or was it that the testing wasn't rigorous enough?
Yeah, it wasn't an absence of testing. It wasn't rigorous enough.
Nice. Okay, cool. Yeah. I think that's really important for the listeners here, is that talk about purpose, a real clearly aligned purpose between what you're assessing and what it informs and why. And I think that there's, you know, I talk to people about, there's a very big difference between using a CMJ as a KPI performance oriented assessment versus a CMJ as part of a rehabilitation informed decision-making process. The purpose is entirely different, you know, and you may even be looking at different metrics. And I think that resonates with me with what you're saying, is that I also made those sort of mistakes where it was like, click a button, do the CMJ. And I wasn't distinguishing any difference between using it as a KPI and using it to inform the decision-making process in rehab. That's cool.
For sure. And I just add to that is the way I'm thinking about it is it's all about improving your decision-making and taking calculated risk, because that's what rehab is in high-performance sport, calculated risk. Because we could hold them out of playing for long, long, long periods of time by not taking risk. But that's not high-performance rehab.
No, 100%. 100%. So let's look at, like, you're an established practitioner. You've got line management responsibilities now. You've got people that you support as a mentor as well. What are the mistakes that you see other coaches making in any, you know, environment, whether it's rehab or performance, on-field, off-field? What are you seeing as common mistakes that could be avoided with a little bit of awareness? What are the commonalities you see?
Yeah, so the three that I think I see, when I was thinking about this before, was practitioners not being clear on their principles. Nice. And the things that they're your rules that you would apply in any context. You know, how do you stay true to those? Not clear enough on what the end goal is. So I don't think a lot of particularly early career practitioners spend the time truly understanding what you're trying to achieve at the end. Well, you know, if we think the rehab sense and we go back to part one, like what's the end goal we're getting to? So I think that needs to be tighter in a lot of instances. And then the last one is the same mistake I made early career, and that is that looseness around assessments. You know, how tight are you on your rigor around how you apply your assessments and what your KPIs and norms that you want? What are the cutoffs? Like, what's acceptable?
Yeah, nice. They're fantastic, and I see the same. Yeah, principle-based approaches are really, really critical, I think, in this day and age, with everything we absorb and engage with is generally outcome-orientated. We see an exercise, we see a prescription, etc., and we go, right, that's cool, I'll use that, but we have no context, or we miss the contextual side of things. In terms of the non-technical side of things, how have you made, or have you advised people that you manage, based on your experiences in the soft skill side of things? Is there any advice you can give there with respect to mistakes you observe from young practitioners who maybe don't know what they don't know yet in that interactive element of human interaction within coaching?
Yep. Talk to your coaches is number one for sure. It's a pretty obvious one. I think probably the biggest advice that I've given to, you know, the people that I manage and others is a text message is better than an email, and a phone call is better than a text message, and a face-to-face conversation is better than a phone call.
Yeah.
And so if you are having challenges, don't do any of the first two. Get straight on the phone or get face-to-face.
That requires being quite brave, especially if it's a conflicting, challenging conversation. But it's absolutely needed to ensure there's no miscommunication, right? And that everything is contextualized. Were you guilty of that? Is that born out of your own stumbles?
No, I don't think I was necessarily guilty of it. But what I suppose, challenged myself to do as I've developed is be faster to own my mistakes. And one of the things that I have deliberately done is when I have made like a proper stuff up, that day I would have marched myself into the head coach's office and say, hey, I stuffed up here. a couple instances that I can recall, I've said, I don't know what mistake I made yet. I know I made one. I just don't know what it is, but I'll figure it out. And I'm not going to make it again. Or even if it was just like, you know, there's a couple of instances where I went, you know what, we stuffed up there. I'm gutted. You're gutted. Players gutted. Just so you know, like we're working really hard to try and fix this. And even it's just like allow the coach to vent, you know, and be not a punching bag. But don't let things fester. And so you've just got to get it out in the open that day.
Yeah, you've absolutely nailed that, because I've written down that day in exclamation mark. And then you've just finished off there and wrapped it up with like, don't fester. And I think that is a huge mistake that people make, is that they dwell on something. They know that there's a gut instinct that they made a mistake, even if they don't know what it is yet, but they haven't faced it head on and they haven't done it with a discussion. And I've been guilty of that for sure. The problem is, the longer you leave it, the more biased you become in your own world, and you get confirmation bias and you go, oh, it wasn't my fault. And the head coach is thinking, it is his fault. Actually, like, staying together and integral as part of a team is really critical. So that's awesome. That's really, really cool.
Maybe just, I'm thinking it just like as we, you were talking then.
Yeah.
Don't let it fester and do it that day if you know that you're the one that's made the mistake.
Yeah.
But if it's potentially on the other side where you feel like the coach or a physio or whoever has made a mistake, sleep on that. Don't go that day, because you're probably angry and, you know, a bit in a huff.
Yeah.
And you might say or do things or even email things and you'll hit send in the wrong emotional state and you'll want to retract that, but you can't.
Yeah, that's really, really powerful. That's really cool. I think, but you are, if put the shoe on the other foot then, in terms of, let's say, a person within your team, you feel that there's a mistake there. Maybe you sense that they know it, but they're not brave enough or don't have the confidence to discuss it, own it, as you say.
Mm-hmm.
Would your advice, what's your advice there to get the best out of that situation as a colleague and peer? Not in a challenging conflict way, but in a, okay, let's learn from this way. What would you encourage people to do there to bring the best out of other people?
Yeah, well, I think if you observe that in someone else, or if I observe that in, you know, one of my team, you know, I can have an impartial conversation because I'm not involved in my role in the day-to-day of their operations. You know, I'm a little bit removed from the day-to-day of each sport. So I can be that person who can have an unbiased conversation, just talk through, like, how did that go? Why did that happen? Like, what can you do differently, et cetera, et cetera. But it could equally be someone who sits next to them, you know, in the office, and they can have that conversation. Doesn't have to be me. And we might leave that with, like, well, what are your next steps? Like, maybe you should go, and I might encourage, like, I think you should go and speak to the person now. You know, or not. Like, I might think, you know what, it's gone so far. Maybe you let it go 2 weeks. Things have moved on. Maybe it's not worth it. Maybe it is. Hope so.
Nice. Look, Si, I think that's a really appropriate point to end. Covered a lot there, from your early reflections as a coach through to rehab, mistakes and stumbles, working with coaches, working with peers, owning mistakes. I want to say a huge thank you to the listeners for your contributions here, both in the strategy episode and this stumbles episode. And just from me to you, Simon, thank you so much.
Thanks, Dan.
Thank you all again for listening to another episode of the podcast. Thanks to Simon for sharing so openly and candidly, and I hope you all took something from the episode. Next week, we have Rob Folks, who is coming in from Western Force rugby team. He's head of strength and conditioning over there, so I'm looking forward to sharing his performance strategies and stumbles with you over the next 2 weeks. Myself and a number of my co-mentors like Rob Anderson, Andy McDonald, Sean McLaren, and Spencer Goggin have 2 free webinars where you can come and have a meeting of the minds with us and talk about ways that you can advance your career. So look out for that again in the show notes below. Use the link, register, and we hope to see you at one of those meetings. That's it from me. Look forward to hosting you again next week with Rob.